Welcome to the Script and Style Show, the web show where we talk about web development with the people that make it happen. Today's episode is brought to you by TrackJS JavaScript Error Monitoring. Know when errors hit your website with the context to find and fix bugs fast with TrackJS. Start your free trial today at trackjs.com. Hey, welcome to Script and Style. I'm Todd Gardner from TrackJS, and my co-host David Walsh, creator of the popular blog davidwalsh.name. How's it going tonight, David?
Little good, little bad, but this is our first PM show.
Drinks.
drinks are flowing. So even if there is a little bit bad, there's a little bit of good to tide us over. What do you got in your glass tonight?
I am sipping on some Macallan Scotch as part of the TrackJS Christmas presents for this year in my fine Take My Money Fry glass. What about you?
So I'm actually drinking something from your neck of the woods. It's a Surly DAF.
The DAF.
Yes. It's a Brute IPA. It's outstanding. I was on like a grapefruit / fruit IPA thing for a while. But these new Brute IPAs are unbelievable. You got to try it. Have you had it?
I have not had DAF. I've had a lot of Surly. My particular favorite from Surly is something you get at their tap room called Fiery Hell. Hell is their regular lager. But if you go to the tap room, you can get Fiery Hell where they infuse it with chili peppers. And so it's a spicy lager that is both, you know, it heats up your mouth and cools it down altogether. And I think it's excellent.
That sounds amazing. But we are not drinking alone tonight, are we?
No, we are not. We have the ever entertaining Christina Duravage joining us today. Christina is an LED engineering extraordinaire and a front end engineer at SmartThings. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for letting me on the show, even though I don't have a guitar in my background.
Aww. You can work up to it.
Yeah, okay. That's a gift after episode 3. This is your second one. We're going to be getting it. It was your third. This is your third. It's on the way.
Yeah, okay. You better get that ordered. What are you drinking, Christina?
Yeah, what do you got?
I'm drinking the finest box wine that one can get. So...
See, I didn't realize that was legitimately your
No, I really am drinking the finest box wine. It stays good forever, so.
Well, I'll make sure to get some of that for my Doomsday bunker.
Okay. Well, yeah, probably.
Have you been watching Doomsday Preppers?
I have. I'm
on
sorry.
Netflix? Is that where
sorry.
That came from?
I'm sorry. I have been, and I'm not proud of it, but.
I've been watching it too. It's so ridiculous. My God.
Speaking of Doomsday, we have an awesome topic that we're going to hit in a second. But let's do a little bit of news first, Todd. You wanted to talk about a couple things, and I'm excited to hear about them.
Yeah, so there were two interesting stories that kind of made their circulation today. The first is this thing from Amazon called Keeping Open Source Open Source. And so basically, Amazon has decided that that the Elasticsearch team or the Elasticsearch project has too much proprietary code in it. And that over the last couple of years, they've been mixing in proprietary code right alongside the open source code that powers Elasticsearch. And that they really have no intention to stop doing it. Now, Elastic as a company who pushes Elasticsearch and Kafka and a number of other tools has basically said that they need to do this in order to stay profitable and that they intend to continue doing it. But a number of companies, including Amazon and Netflix and a few others mentioned in this article that we'll link in the show notes, has said that they value only the open source part of this. And so they are forking it. They are going to create a fork of Elasticsearch that will be 100% open source. So what I think is really interesting about this is that Elastic is one of the big software companies in this latest generation that's really tried to make a go of being profitable and sustainable as a company and still being based at its core around open source. And, you know, the investors or whoever is pulling the ultimate strings is kind of saying that this isn't going to work and that they have to go a proprietary way in order to make money.
That is harsh on them that Amazon is going their own way. Anytime you see a fork like this, I know that like back in the day, a couple of the Mootools people weren't super happy with each other, and there was a threat of a fork. And I feel like whenever that comes up, a fork is something you really, really have to think about. Because, you know, one person's going to have security patches, the other isn't going to. But I'm also, I'm kind of excited to see Amazon go the open source route. If you would have asked me before this who would have done that, I wouldn't have picked them. But it's actually,
I think Amazon stands to benefit because they have a hosted Elasticsearch service as part of their cloud offering. And so they benefit in the guaranteeing that they're not going to have to pay licensing fees to Elastic at any point, because they can be guaranteed that they can be completely open source. And then all of the people who use it will automatically kind of be forced over into Amazon's fork. And so they kind of have this built-in user base that's captive already. And so I'd be actually really worried for the Elastic people.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's a big customer that you stand to lose if that's the case. But good on Amazon. I think that's really cool.
So the second article that's also related to this is that Nginx, the company that builds, you know, blazing fast web servers that have kind of dominated the front end for a number of years, has been acquired by F5 Networks. F5 is this company that's been around for ages and ages and builds application layer firewalls and load balancers, all kinds of big enterprise-y stuff that they charge you many hundreds of thousands of dollars to use. So most of us have probably never purchased anything from F5 directly, although if you work for a big enterprise, you've probably used it before. And so here's kind of another example of a free and open source product in Nginx kind of getting bought up because they need the money. They need to grow. It's hard to figure out how to make money if you give all of your stuff away.
Yeah, I just had never even thought of Nginx. Like, I've used it in so many projects, but that NPM is a company, but I never even thought of, like, Nginx was always just there. So
why would you pay them?
Yeah, yeah. It's probably not great of me to think that way, but yeah, it just, when I read that Nginx got bought, it's like, really? I guess I just thought they were more of like a full open source thing. So
these benevolent Russian wizards who can just like figure how to make the web run really fast, but ultimately everybody needs to pay their rent or their mortgage and buy beer. So where does that money come from is an important question that I think is facing a lot of technology companies today.
So what exactly, you're going to kill me, what exactly does Nginx do for us? Is it like an Apache competitor sort of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So think of the Apache web server.
Yeah.
That, you know, was very dominant for a long time. But, you know, it had some problem, like the configuration was kind of hard sometimes, and it wasn't quite as fast as it could be. It had a few problems with it. And so Nginx came up like really not that long ago, 2003, something like that. And it was just like so much faster than Apache and so much easier to use. So you could stand up a Nginx server to do like really simple things, like just be a reverse proxy in front of something else. And it added almost no additional overhead.
Nice.
Like it was just so fast to run. And so a lot of services have like run behind Nginx today, just for those things. Like, how do you load balance across three backend node services? You use Nginx to do it. It's kind of like the canonical solution to that problem.
Is there any sort of immediate fear here or not really?
I don't think anything is immediate. It's just, what does F5 do in the long term? F5 is an enterprise company, a closed source company and they are public. They need to make money on their investments. And so are they going to keep putting money into Nginx? Are they going to slowly start closing the Nginx source as they add more cool features to it, but they're all premium features? They're all closed source features? Right. Does Nginx end up getting forked by Amazon a year from now because they don't want to pay F5 its licensing fees? I don't know what's going to happen. It's just these two things both happening on the same day felt kind of weird. Like they're related and about open source.
Open source is a hell of a ride. You and I both know
that. Yeah.
So speaking of a hell of a ride, let's talk about my last week and how this topic came about. Now, on the third episode of the Amazing Script and Style show, we talked to David Neal about imposter syndrome. I wrote a blog post about it, and it ended up being like one of my most popular posts that still I get comments on every day, mainly because everybody gets this feeling every once in a while. So, with beer in hand, let me tell you about last week. So right now, if you want to work on anything in Firefox, you have to clone a Mercurial repository. We don't use Git. We have a mirror on GitHub, but you need to do all of your stuff in this Mercurial repository called Mozilla Central. But us on the debugger team, we're a special snowflake in that we have what we call a launch pad, which allows us to run the debugger in the browser and work on it like it's a normal web page. And that's awesome for contributors because they get to use their GitHub workflow. And you don't have to build Firefox to see your changes, right? So I learned last week how we keep these two in sync, the GitHub repository, the stuff that we merge there, and then move over to Mercurial later. And you know what I learned? It's really hard. And it's something that needs to be done manually. So our last podcast, we had Jason Laster on, who I appreciate greatly, but I appreciate him even more now because he'd been handling it. And so just going through this entire process, I needed to not just learn about, syncing these two things, but I had to learn more about Git and cherry picking and, you know, a whole bunch of Git skills, bisecting. I had to learn about Mercurial all over again. And I felt like the biggest moron in the world because it just felt so difficult. And not only that, I created a couple of Mercurial patches to fix some awesome bugs. They got backed out more than once.
Were the bugs awesome or was your fix awesome?
My fix was really awesome. The bug was awesome to make my fix sound that much more awesome. But, you know, it was just a week where everything went wrong. And not only did everything go wrong, I started the week out on an incredible high because I implemented a build system inside Mozilla Central that allowed all of the other dev tools to use JSX. Right now they're all using like React DOM's dom.div, which is a total nightmare to code out, right? So I came into the week on this incredible high and left it at the bottom of the ocean. And I thought that I needed to commiserate, luckily in the PM with drinks, with maybe some other people who have felt like imposters and just sort of talk through it. Because I think a lot of people feel this way. And let's be honest, we could probably have imposter syndrome every other episode, but it's cool to talk about it now. So like, Christina, what does imposter syndrome mean to you? Like, how does it hit you?
Well, for me, there's been kind of two separate channels. There's like my actual job of being a software engineer, but then I started getting into hardware as kind of a hobby. And that hard, like coming into something that is some people's profession, like they went to school for X number of years for it. There's a ton of stuff to learn that I don't know. And being like, hey guys, I want to make LEDs light up. Like, you know, that's like coming in like that is a separate thing that I had to, like, my favorite story to kind of tell is like, I needed to get a continuous rotation servo. So a servo that went 360 degrees and I needed it like right now for whatever reason. It was like, I have to wait 2 weeks from China to get it or whatever. So I had heard that like the hobby, like the kind of RC car and drone, like those kind of hobby stores would have them. And I went there and I'm like, I asked the guy that worked behind the counter, like, hey, do you guys have these servos? And he's like, well, for what? And I'm like, oh, for like Arduinos, like stuff like that. And he's like, no, these are different servos. They won't work. And I'm like, okay, can I just like look at one? And I looked at one and I mean, in retrospect, the guy behind the counter who deals with RC cars all day isn't going to know about Arduino programming. But like in earlier, Christina probably would have been like, this isn't a, like someone who knows what he's talking about. Oops, I guess it's not the right thing. Goodbye. But like, you can feel like an imposter, but that doesn't necessarily mean you know nothing. Like, you know something about something. And, you know, with that guy, I think I just was like, okay, yeah, I'll just get this thing that won't work. Whatever, sir. And then it totally does work. Like, it's totally fine. So, yeah. So, like, anyway, it's been, you know, that's kind of both that. And then I transitioned into being a contractor for, like, a couple years of my career. And that was a good thing for going from when you're full time and you're just kind of, you're in a job and it's fine or whatever. But when you're going into a contracting, you have to be confident that you're going to keep getting jobs and that you're going to ask for the rate that you deserve. And honestly, Todd and another friend of ours, like, really helped me through that when I needed it to help me get into contracting. And so I know we're probably going to talk about solutions later, but like, I will always be grateful for Todd and our other friend for, like, when I was like, oh, I should ask for this amount, being like, no, ask for more money, and really helping me go through that helped me for a really big part of my career.
Awesome. Cheers, Todd.
And helped you make more money.
Yeah. Thanks for that, for sure.
So Todd, like, what does imposter syndrome mean to you? And have you found yourself in a position where you felt like an imposter recently?
I think the more diverse work that you are expected to do as an engineer, I think the more frequently you will run into imposter syndrome. What we do is a very broad set of skills. Like, we don't just get to do like one kind of thing. Like, you don't just get to like throw up node services or hack React components all day, every day. Like, that's not anybody's job or very few people's job. Like, we're expected to do other things. Like, in your case, you had to solve like some nasty like merge problems using Mercurial, or you have to like solve some complex thing and build like this weird regex to flush out like how something works, or you have to get into the nitty gritties of how a particular browser renders a CSS rule and you need to like tweak that. There's all of these little nooks and crannies in our industry or life, really, that you're expected to be able to jump in and work with. And if you consider yourself an expert in one thing, if you feel like you know things about one thing, and then you're thrust into this other domain that you know nothing at all about, it's really easy to feel like an imposter. It's really easy to be like, hey, I know a whole lot about this thing, but man, Mercurial, I don't even know where to begin. Like, where's the docs? Getting started, lesson one. And you feel like an idiot. You're like, nobody should be paying me as much as they're paying me if I have to go to getting started, lesson one. But it's, nobody can know everything, right? Like, in my role, I get pushed to do all kinds of things that aren't even really development. Like, I have to work on like advertising and trying to measure the effectiveness of an ad, or going to a conference and figuring out how do I communicate something in front of a group of people and still like teach people, but it be a positive experience for both them and for me and for my company. Like, how do you do those sorts of things? And those are all not your traditional job, not like not a developer's job, but it might be your job in that context. So you'll have to figure out how to do it. And just because that's not where your core expertise is, doesn't necessarily mean you're an imposter. It just means you have to do a lot of things.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that's pretty long-winded.
I don't agree that that's long-winded, but I agree with what you're saying. Like, I feel like another part of imposter syndrome is the amount of pressure that we put on ourselves to be that, right? Like, it's very seldom that someone comes to me or to you or to Christina and says, well, why didn't you know that? You know, you were supposed
to come. You're an imposter. How dare you?
Point finger. Yeah. But I think that the pressure that we put on ourselves, whether it's, you know, we should have done it faster, we shouldn't have run into that mistake, like I know a big thing for me is title. Like I'm a senior engineer. I should just be able to step into that. I think that plays
a senior engineer would be able to do that.
That's right. David. I think that's like I am the senior engineer and I can't do it. But like I feel like it's the amount of pressure that we put on ourselves that we could either ask for help better, we could communicate where we are better. I think we're putting all of this pressure on ourselves, and I don't think it's always fair. I feel like we're always our worst critic, and that's leading us into these sort of feelings. And like, I don't know whether it's the same for you guys, but when I start going down that road, I start screwing up the little things, and it sort of compounds, right? It sort of like goes into confidence, and I sort of I compare it to like video games. I play a lot of first person shooters. So if I go into a fight thinking I'm going to lose, I end up losing. But if you turn that corner with confidence, you're probably going to win. And so like, how would you guys say how safe are you guys in your confidence level? I'll start with you, Christina, where when you start going down this road, you're able to prevent yourself from going too far into thinking that, I'm not good enough to be doing this sort of thing.
I've had a lot of practice, like organizing, like for me, what I was doing is I would do so much stuff and I would learn things and like, you know, but then I would always feel like I was never going anywhere. And so I started keeping a better, like a journal of like I have it right here, this little like this thing called a passion planner, and every week it says like what's a good thing that you did this week. And so when I learn something new, when I accomplish something, I write that down for the week. And then every month there's a end of month kind of retrospective, and like normally for me, I would get to the end, like even when I wasn't keeping this, I would just get to the end of the month and be like, well, I guess I just pissed away an entire month. Like, I don't remember what I did. But by actually like going through and seeing week by week, like, oh, that's right, I did that thing, I figured this out, you know, by it, like you do that so often. If you do that enough, like you start to, when you catch yourself being like, well, I guess I just pissed away another month. Like, no, you did stuff like every other month that you thought you pissed away. Like, you just have to kind of get in the habit of kind of knowing of like confidence for me was about organization and about being able to catch up on what I actually did. And I'm not saying that I'm perfect at it all the time now. Like it's like it went away completely and I'm healed, but like I can kind of catch that thought and know that Christina, you probably did do something this month, like chill for a second. And then like later on we can go through, you know, like rather than getting in kind of that panic cycle of like, I didn't do anything, I haven't done anything, my entire career is a lie, like I'm a fraud, they're going to find out, I'm going to get fired, and then my house will get lost and I'll have three homeless cats, like, you know, but you can kind of catch yourself, like it cycles down super fast if you let it. So I don't know, hopefully that makes sense.
No, it doesn't.
Was the bottom of the cycle is three homeless
cats. Yeah, the cats and I are going to move into my Mazda, and you know, I don't know what happens then. They're not going to be happy about living in a car.
I don't know how to follow up living in a car, but like Todd, how good are you at catching yourself when this happens?
Oh, I'm not. I'm not at all. I think developers spend so much of their time thinking that one of the things that make them good at it is that they're in their heads a lot. And because you're always in your head, you're always second guessing yourself. So I feel like the engineers that I've known have always been a little bit more susceptible to this. I like to think that it's just because we're all in our heads, not that we're all just more insecure, but maybe it's the other, I'm not sure, but there definitely is some relationship there. The thing that really gets to me is that like, so I spend a lot of time trying to track metrics related to our business. And we're trying to like meet certain goals or like try and grow this percent or reduce churn by that percent or whatever. And so all of my work goes towards that. Like if I'm building a new feature, it's because I think that it's important to customers. If I'm working on a new design, it's because I think that that's going to be more helpful. Or if I'm working on an ad, I think I'm going to bring in new people. And so at the end of the month, I do a big set of rituals around bookkeeping and gathering metrics and all of that sort of fun stuff. And I can see what I got done because everything is in our boards and like, here's all the stuff with my name on it. And that's fine. The hard part is that I look at the metrics and sometimes I'll have done a ton of work and the metrics are just flat and like nothing happened. It's like nothing I did mattered. I could have just like hung out and binge watched Doomsday Preppers on Netflix this month and I would have had the same result. And that's hard when you are pushing really hard on something and you're not seeing the effect that you get. And I don't know that I have a good coping plan with that. That is actually really, really hard to get over.
I mean, the nice
booze helps.
Okay. I was going to say like the nice thing about, I mean, for non, you know, people who aren't in your scenario is like, we get tasks done and usually see like, oh, a bug got fixed or something like that. But to, I don't know, Todd, that sounds really shitty.
Well, like, so I think if we can lift each other up here, I think Todd, that in some of that scenario, there are a lot of people out there who get paid a lot of money to do just the things that you're talking about, right? And so that's where you need to give yourself a little bit of credit and leeway in that there are these people out there who this is their specialty, right? Like you're trying to do a lot of stuff. And so, I mean, in fairness to yourself, I'm recognizing that those other tasks are a big deal and take full time for a lot of other people. And so you got to give yourself a little bit of credit there. But one thing that I noticed both of you said was that you were both keeping track of the tasks that you were completing so that you could look back on them and say, I did this. That's something that I don't do. I log on in the morning. I look at the pull request queue and the number next to the issues tab on the project and go, we aren't going anywhere. I'm not doing enough. And I think that that tip that you guys provided was really, really good. And I think is going to help a lot of people be good to themselves and give themselves credit. So outside of, you know, making that list and reviewing it every, you know, at the end of the week, every 2 weeks, every month, what other ways do you, starting with you, Todd, how do you dig yourself out of a hole, out of this mental hole, and bring yourself back up to feeling good about what you're doing again?
I don't know how to answer that. How do you dig yourself out? You need to, you don't, you just keep digging, you just keep digging, and eventually you come out the other
you
side.
Dig upward, right?
Yep. Eventually you end up on the other side. No, it's important to for me anyway. Like, I guess everybody would handle this differently. You have to step away, and you have to look at the big picture of what you have done. Like, even if you don't feel good about like one particular thing that's happening right now, fine. But there's a lot to be like really happy about in all of our situations. Like, honestly, being a software developer in 2019 is not half bad. I mean, when you compare it to like how a lot of people live their lives today, it's not really a bad throw of the dice overall. And so you have that to look at. And then even within that, you've probably done some really cool stuff. Like, we've all built something that we're particularly proud of. And so focusing on that can help you kind of get your confidence back of like, it's not so much about like, maybe the metrics didn't turn out so good. Maybe that feature you shipped wasn't so good. Maybe you looked like a fool because you didn't understand enough about Mercurial. That's not important because you did this other thing and you did it really well. And now you won't make that same mistake next time.
Yeah, it's really good. Christina, how about yourself? Like you mentioned that your old self might have been a little bit timid and took advice that somebody super unqualified gave you. what other coping mechanisms or ways do you dig yourself out of that mental hole?
So like what Todd said is remembering like what you've done is good. And then for me too, thinking about, okay, so you had a shitty week or you feel like you haven't accomplished anything. What can you do next week? Or what can you do next month? What would really help? What is blocking you from doing these things, like from being this your best self? So like kind of case in point recently, I was like, you know, I haven't been building a lot of like LED stuff. I haven't been doing a lot of electronic stuff. I've been working a lot, which is kind of fun, but like I really want to get back into doing some of my other projects. And I looked around and this is my workroom, and it was super, I didn't have any table space. I had just been kind of tossing crap onto the table forever. And it really needed a good, like thorough going through. And so the last two weekends I've spent just throwing stuff away, figuring out what needs to get reorganized. Like I bought these shelving units and put them up, and like now I have a space that I feel super pumped about and super energized about. And I'm like ready to go forward and build something kind of fun. And so like, if it's something where you need to just kind of remind yourself that you have been doing things, that's one thing. But also like if there's something that's maybe not super obvious that's stopping you from doing what you want to do, like resolving that can help a lot. And that's like easier said than done a lot of times. But for me, it was just like, let's get started building something. Oh, I literally do not have any table space in this room to do it. And now like I got some new tables and I threw away a bunch of crap and I have that now. So yeah.
Excellent.
See, I have the opposite problem where when I have something like really important I need to do, I will use cleaning and organizing as a procrastination topic. Like my house has never been cleaner than when I have some really important thing I need to do that I don't want to. It's like suddenly vacuuming the rug has never been more important. I can't send this customer an email. I really got to vacuum right now.
Hey,
right now it's got to happen.
I mean, there's worse ways to procrastinate. So right.
How can I write an email with a dirty rug, Christina?
Oh man. So like those are really good ideas. I think I have a couple of things that help me pull my way out. The first is, what I call little wins, and whether it's a couple documentation updates, just get some code in, get some pull requests in, even if it's the most minor thing, that's really helpful. Two, writing tests is really helpful. And you're not writing tests to make sure something breaks at that moment. You're just doing it to understand your sort of code base better and to think about a different problem. And one thing that I really like to do is, and anyone who's seen, how my blog posts sort of go one after another, if I feel like I'm stuck on a problem in JavaScript, I go to CSS. I try and figure out something over here. I experiment with something else. One of the awesome things about being at Mozilla,
you play a couple of rounds of video games.
We'll get to that in a second. One of the awesome parts about working at Mozilla is there's so many awesome open source projects that are worth your time that I'll spend an hour, 2 hours, half a day teaching myself that and contributing to that because it just gets my head out of where I was before. Going for a bike ride, of course, we can't do that in Polar, Wisconsin right now, but going for a bike ride during the spring, summer, fall is perfect to get out of there. And as Todd alluded to, sometimes you just log in, frag out, and come back when you have the answer. But like it's really important to find out for you what resets your mind. Because once you reset your mind, you come back with new ideas, new questions, and I guess lastly, what I would say is put your ego away and be willing to ask questions of the people around you, because that is.
Are you saying that we should all be willing to look like an imposter?
I like how this episode just came full circle with that question. That is outstanding. I think you do get to a point where you realize you're not an imposter. You just stumbled into something that you weren't expecting, and that just 5 minutes of talking to somebody else would really help you get through it.
Well, think about it too, of like, how many times have you worked with maybe a newer employee and they've had a question and you've immediately gone to, this person is an imposter in their job. It's, for me, it's never happened. Like, there's always a reason of why this person has this question. And like, if you have not thought that about anybody that you've ever worked with, no one's thinking that of you when you ask that question. So it's all up here.
See, I want the answers up here. I don't want the doubt up here. I want all of the answers. I also think that I feel like checking in with teammates to see if they're stumbled onto something that they can't get past is also really helpful. And so we all need to help each other out of this hole that we find ourselves in from time to time. And I think that we should all give each other more credit. And with that, Todd,
especially when you run into crazy ass mercurial bugs that nobody can really figure out how to merge big complex things, we all have to Google it and figure out Stack Overflow to make the right moves.
Thanks for picking me up, man. This is exactly what I needed.
Well, cheers. I've been using Git forever, and I've still like had to be like, look, my Git is so messed up right now. Can you just like look at it and help me out? Like, I've had to ask people, like, I am actually over this problem. If you don't do this, I am deleting this repository and like I'm saving everything in a, oh crap, now I can't remember the name of it. Whatever, a patch. I'm going to save everything in a patch, delete the whole damn thing and restart it if you don't just like, if you can't screw it, help me with this. So
I have done that. I've taken, you know, I've changed these three files. I'm going to save them off into another folder, nuke the whole thing, bring it down again. Sometimes you have to nuke it from orbit. It's the only way to be sure. Earth.
For sure.
Oh, this episode is all about doomsday prepping, scorched earth, and homeless cats.
Yeah.
All right, we've come full circle. That was an awesome discussion. Christina, thank you so much for being here.
Hey, no problem. Todd, thanks for having me.
I need you to do that world famous outro. Oh no, we need that.
We gotta do takeaways, man. The booze is getting to you. That surly is strong.
It's the homeless cats that are pulling on my heartstrings right now. All right. Todd, takeaways from this week.
My biggest takeaway is that it is common for us all to feel like this. And no matter what your level of expertise, we all feel like imposters from time to time as we run into things that we've never run into before. And that doesn't mean that you're an idiot. It doesn't mean that you don't belong here. It just means that you run into a problem that you haven't seen before. And it's how you push forward and figure out the answer that's important. And try not to let it get you down.
Excellent. Christina, how about you? What's your big takeaway from the episode?
I mean, that's just the thing. We're all there. We've all been there. I think I'd be more scared if someone was like, I've never felt like an imposter at my job because I know everything all the time. Like, that's a little bit more like, oof. So just...
That guy's
a little bit, yeah.
Ignorance is bliss, right?
Yeah, just ask questions. And, you know, you're not expected to know everything, even if you're a senior engineer.
My biggest takeaway this week, I think, is I need to catalog my achievements a little bit better. I think that it's easy to look at the commit queue and see what's gone in, but that doesn't...
Dude, you already have, like, a documentation of your achievements. If you just go to davidwalsh.name... Like, there's this whole thing, and you can just scroll back through them. Like, look at all
that's documentation
things.
Of my failures and what I had to look up. But thank you very much, Todd. But again, we need to give ourselves more credit for the stuff that we've done and the stuff that we're learning. And there's a pretty good chance that if we do a good job solving the problems that we run into, we probably won't be running into them again. Excellent.
Yep.
That's fantastic.
Give me that famous outro, Todd.
All right. Well, all right. So that's it for our show today. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back in a week or two with another show. If you have an idea for what you'd like us to talk about, or if you'd like to have somebody on the show, please let us know. Reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at Todd H. Gardner. Christina?
I am at Galicia, G-E-L-I-C-I-A.
At DavidWalsh.name or blog DavidWalsh.name at DavidWalsh blog. We'll see you next week.
The Script and Style Show is recorded and produced by David Walsh and Todd Gardner. We'll see you next time on Script and Style. And we're